congressional committee, and the Corps has a lot of layers to get through from now until June. We've got to have it in place really by June in order to get the full project. So I'm not holding my breath, but everybody knows the importance of doing the full project this time, particularly for us, because it may be our last full project with federal money. We hope not. Federal authorization for Carolina Beach basically is still nowhere. We're looking at a few bills possibly to put some language in, but those bills are stalled. They're in a transportation bill right now. They're trying to get through. That's, you know, what the final, like this, it's kind of hard to get through that too. So really nowhere with getting the reauthorization. Time's ticking. We're trying. That's about it for anything else.
We really made it really apparent to the people that we talked to that MOA was important, and we had to get this thing expedited. And then there was a part that they tacked on last week's agenda. They were going to say something about that.
Sorry, say that.
Tack you on to the end of it with another year before you get the re-nursing.
Well, ours is a year. Obviously, we're on a different rotation. We're 2014. And I think mainly what we stressed to everyone was we need that contributing authority as swiftly as possible to help certainly help Carolina Beach out. And we were working on the reauthorization. In Riceville Beach's case, basically all that we were stressing was that we hope there'll still be contributions from the federal government in 2014, because we're a year later. One of the long-term goals, well, I hope it's not long-term, I hope it's fairly short-term, is to get our three beaches on the same rotation. It doesn't make sense for, what do we say, it's 2.2 million, I think, to get all the equipment here.
Mobilization.
Yeah, mobilization. It makes sense that we do our, like we did last time, that we all do our nourishment at the same cycle. We do ours every four because of the Masonboro Inlet and the federal requirements of that inlet. And we have to put some of the sand on Masonboro Island. I don't know if we'd be able to pull it eventually. All those do 4 years. That remains to be seen, but sure would save a lot of money.
They're probably trying to schedule 4 years, which would do all of us a little bit of disnumber about delay and what they could. But
it's a complicated subject.
Yeah, we all talked to the people, and they all said, like I said, that they appreciate us being there, and they need to keep us, and they need to be kept in the loop, and so just keep on doing the same thing. But anyway,
I guess it was my because I'm a rookie and I had experience. You guys came back. I was a little more optimistic. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen overnight. But I did take away from that McIntyre's office is talking directly to Senator Hayden's office. I mean, they had conversations directly about the MOA. They understand the urgency. We had the Corps was there in force, representing the county. The local Wilmington office is in our corner for the beach communities to get things done. So they were pushing for it. They have a vested interest in getting that agreement signed so that they can keep the work. So I thought the feedback from the elected official was they were paying attention. They knew the issues when we walked in. I don't know if it's because they were well briefed, and that's the way they usually treat us, but they understand that the money that was found to get the nourishment done in time, Carolina Beach or Curie Beach in the Carolina Beach project, is a benefit to get the whole thing done at one time. I think June's a pretty quick timeline for them, but they all seem to understand that process. And they were well aware that the 50-year cycle process is coming to an end, and they're advocating to get that agreement. So I agree.
I feel like there'll be some kind of money coming. I hope, I'll keep my fingers crossed on the chances. But it's always been like that in the past. It's not like the money came way ahead of time. It seems like we're always having to fight for it every time, and usually at the end they'll be able to help us out in some manner. And we need to make the cases for beach towns. We need to do a real good job public relations-wise of how important our beach towns are to the economy locally, and we need to make sure our senators and our state representatives all understand that.
I think just being able to express to them, we were there asking why we needed to ask permission to spend our money to contribute. They understood that. They understood how ironic and illogical that sounded. And that kind of government functioning, that they understood that that's just frustrating for a small community trying to plan and budget. Spend our own money, we told we can't quite spend it yet. We're not going to let you have the money from the feds to protect your own environment. So they understand that dichotomy. So,
Yeah, I think they all scratched their heads and, you know, said, well, that's why we do it in Washington, but that's not.
We really helped have everyone there, and the guys from all over there, and we had the mayor of the county there pushing, so I thought they saw a good concerted effort from the community. It wasn't just one group asking for the funding, and I think that really helped the three towns together present the same case.
Yeah, last year, I think we kind of did it on our own. So the county was involved with Carolina Beach and County, I shouldn't say Prairie Beach, Carolina Beach, and I don't know if you got something there. But basically the same answer.
Yeah.
But it's just, you know, just giving the message over and over and over, you know, how many times do I say it before you understand?
Well, and I'll further say, and I'll be quiet, it's like, I don't know how much all the, everyone in the room understands the contingency plan. And even if we, you know, it's real important to get that contributing authority, but there's only, that $35 million that's in that pot can go fairly quick based on how much, like the way it's designed is, and I kept trying to stress this to the representatives, 17.5% is what each town would be responsible for if the state and federal governments don't come up with enough money. So we would be responsible for 17.5%. If you've got a $5 million project, that's over $800,000. That's a lot of money for our beach towns. That's a big part of our budget. So we really need to make the case to these guys, certainly on this next spring arrangement, that they need to be pitching in. We need time to plan. You and I have talked about that. We need time to plan to come up with these amounts of money, because we don't have it right now. So we, you know, really need to lobby hard. It's crucial that we get 82.5% from the state and federal government.
That was another thing I heard too, that we almost missed the window for the state budget, as they hadn't approved yet, but they did scramble and got some numbers, and I think the captain helped charge that. There are some numbers in the budget to help get a full project for both Carolina and Prairie Beach. And I think the goal is hopefully for an MOA to be in place by June, plans and specs to be done, bid let, and project going down in November for Carolina and Prairie Beach through April. I think the goal for you guys is to make sure there's plan and spec money there too. And I did hear a little bit of buzz about maybe some money being there for plans and specs, which we hadn't seen
yet. Yeah, McIntyre's office is supposed to get back in touch with us, and they said they thought some good news.
Yeah.
Did you actually talk to McIntyre and Hagan's?
Yeah.
I mean,
we talked to McIntyre. We talked to Jones's office. We talked to Hagan's. McIntyre was the only representative that we met with personally. They were all in and out floating on issues on the floor. But they were all well versed. Staff, and you know, staff looks like to ourselves, they're the ones that are going to help. The elected official looks at staff and says, what do I do? And so we got Dennis Barber came on behalf of the Carolina Beach Inlet Association. He had some material printed up to show the value of keeping the inlets open on those shallow draft inlets. So that was a tag on the conversation we had. We were able to express to them that we're dealing with all these issues as local municipalities, and these all affect our budgets. And we are relatively small beach towns with small budgets, and you can't just start dumping millions of dollars in our lap without some kind of planning and assistance. So I know as we enter into the budget season, we're starting to look at how we start setting aside funds for the next 3 years, because we're on a 3-year cycle.
And that was in the paper today, too. I don't know if you saw that on the front page about the inlets and the state looking at a funding mechanism to go paper.
Like, I will tell you that the Carolina Beach Inlet Association, those guys have really stepped up and put together a concerted effort, not only for the Carolina Beach Inlet, but for all five of the shallow draft inlets in the state. So they've reached out to all the different inlets to come up with statewide mechanisms and to get approval through the state legislators on how to fund that. So it just doesn't fall on the local municipalities. Last year, this year, we were fortunate enough to get a big chunk from the county, and most of the municipalities, you know, all to it in Riceville and Curie Beach, which they're always grateful for.
Yeah, the $500,000
will be there twice, is about what they say. About close. It depends on how secure it is. It can run anywhere from $300,000 to $400,000 per dredge, how deep they want to get it. But I was shocked at the economic impact that those inlets have. And just the local economy and the taxes they generate for each of our communities, for the county, for the state, for the feds, and the amount of employment multiplier, it was pretty substantial. And Dennis said he would make some more of those packages available to get to each of the councils and that's what
we
wanted to.
We had to split up in Washington, David, and I mean, Dennis and the mayor of Carolina Beach went to one meeting that they had at the North Carolina Beach.
Association of Waterways.
Yeah, where are they?
We got a lot of knowledge.
We win the races while we're up there.
I would suggest that the three mayors compose a letter and send it, saying, you know, talk to them. Reiterate what we need, and don't let it fade. If, you know, we go there and all of a sudden we don't think it for 3 or 4 months, then we think about it again during the budget session. I think you ought to compose a letter right now, all three of your mayors, and sign off on it. Send it to Hagan and McIntyre and anybody else up there. Have to pound those dents.
You know, it seems to me, I'm glad that the Carolina Beach Youth Association has reached out to the other shallow draft members. Because anytime you can have a coordinated strategy like that, you have a much better chance of making yourselves heard, not just here, but at the federal level too. So you pull in Walter Jones, or whoever gets elected up there, and whoever's going to come from that South Brunswick County area too, it gives you a little bit more clout. And it's, you know, it's unified around a single issue.
They've been reaching out. They have had meetings. I've attended a few of them. I know the mayor's been in most all of them. They had Carolyn Justice came down. She gave us some really sage advice on how to reach out to the sports fishermen or putting a sports fishing bill out that have membership across the state, because the concern has always been shallow draft inlet. Representatives are coastal representatives. They're not as well voiced at the state level. Maybe some of the inland representatives, they don't care some of the way of those committees. So by reaching to some of the sports fishermen across, there was over 2,000 members. So she gave them some pretty good advice, and they reached out inland too to get to counties inland. Because basically, if you don't have the inlets, if you want to sport fish, you can get to the ocean. But if you can get to the beach, you can't get to the ocean. So they're making a case. It's been very impressive to watch those guys work together as a private group, just to come together.
They also had Senator Rouser come down and talk to him, and he told him, you know, how to get their information to him, and he get people in the state to quantify all their numbers, and then use it that way to go to the state. So.
You know, you're doing something right when all the representatives take credit for finding the money. Yeah. At least 4 or 5 of us said, aren't you glad I got you that money? So. That's
All right. Is that all the discussion there is on Peachtree Nursery?
Well, I mean, I don't know if Tim would put you on the spot. I agree with the letter, sending a letter to the three of us, just rehashing what our, maybe a summary of what we discussed. I think that's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Tim's a good writer.
Yeah, I've done that.
I'll ship around to Nancy and Bob.
Yeah, no hurry.
I might look at it.
Okay, sounds great. Thank you.
Yeah. I think the other is also, at some point, some kind of contact program available where we can get our constituents, because that's what's most effective. It's one thing, but it's effective to hear from the mayor of the small business town. I'm sure they appreciate that. But if they get 200 emails out of Wrightsville Beach, 200 emails out of Curie Beach, 200 emails out of Carolina Beach from individual homeowners saying, what are you doing? I voted for you. Protect my community. So if we can maybe work on coming up with some kind of communication campaign to keep that in the forefront. Because that's what elected officials, they understand when the constituents show up and ask for something. That's what we need to vote for. I have to get that letter done.
I'm
sending
out a thing on Slack.
Well, we can coordinate that on Facebook or the web pages that people have out there. I mean, that's, yeah. This is an extremely important issue in these communities. If we don't figure out how to do it, our hotels are doing it.
Either one you are.
Said
they had a bulk rate going for the people down on the beach that have what was it? Tonight, old pool. What was the name of the place that has the spa?
So we're doing weekend packages. Since we build the tiki bar out there, I think we're
going to find them on the call. They filled me in on this one during the trade.
I tell you what you learn when you got these things.
She has off the record.
She can't type that.
Okay, next. Paid parking, good and bad, you know. David, talk to Jim.
Yeah, so paid parking, you guys are already doing it. Perry Beach is considering it. So we're trying to figure out the numbers first off as a budgetary issue, but kind of this is a good opportunity to hear from people that are actually living it, what pains you've experienced. So Bryce will did it a pretty long time ago. I think y'all was in junior high when you guys did it. Maybe not. but actually I remember because I was at the right time to hear all the bad, right? So actually I do remember that part. Carolina Beach has been up and down, so I'm not sure exactly y'all's history.
That was 2002 or 3, probably, right. Something like that.
And so the concern for us is we're much smaller than both of you guys. We don't have the turnover, and monetarily it's like right at a breakover, and it's really driven more by, okay, what is the potential downside, I think. So council's kind of tasked me to look at the money side, but I asked Dean if we could bring this up at the top and to hear from you guys is what is the non-financial issues that you've experienced with implementing parking in your beach town. So for Rice Beach, it may be a pretty longer term thing, but I know you guys have done some things over the years that went up and down with it. And then Carolina Beach, maybe just the as you phase into it, what kind of issues show up and what you're still seeing now even with it, right? That sound like a fair question for you guys? Mm-hmm. Right? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, parking provides 34% of our basic revenues.
Sure.
Which is extremely important. We have 1,450 or so, give or take a couple of companies. If you do a driveway, it's a parking vessel. And it's a mixed bag of paid stations and traditional meters. It works out very well for us. Our gross is about $2 million a year. We pay out about $500,000 for that turnkey operation. And that turnkey operation, we buy all the equipment, we provide the facility, we provide everything right down to the pads and pencils, we pay for the, we pay essentially the pass-through for their personnel too. And the reason we do that is in the event that something goes bad, something goes south, we'll have the equipment, we don't have the wherewithal other than the people that sit behind the desk. We'll have the system up and running. And over the years since I've been there, the 7 years I've been there, we've looked at alternatives of having it in-house and doing it with a contractor. And because of the technology has gone so far, it's been, as long as you have good, sound, consistent management, it's very favorable to have a contractor do it. We treat their manager just like a member of our staff. We see the staff meeting. Their people are treated just like our staff. They come to our gatherings. So it works very, very well. The other good part about having a contractor do it is the breadth of collections as far as citations are concerned goes with them, and also the breadth of the complaints, because inevitably you're going to have complaints. But it generally doesn't filter to my level, a harsh email here and there, and right. There is too. But it doesn't filter to my level until it's going through the approval process, and that's very, very rare. We found that it's been very positive. There's only been 1 year in the 7 that I've been there that it hasn't been positive, and that's because they went through some managers that just didn't connect. But aside from that, their management has been very strong.
Well, so what about how many different rules, and in the 7 years may happen before you got there, did you have to add for off-street and protecting parking away? In other words, non-labeled parking spots. So that's kind of a concern for us. When we implement paid parking, they're going to move to the back streets. And it's town property. So it's town right-of-way on those streets. So right now, no one's parking in people's yards that people think are their yards, but it's not really their yards. It's really town property because of the right-of-way.
Well, the dynamics that you have to address are people that want to sell parking places to drive it for $20 a day. Mm-hmm. We have an ordinance built around that.
Right.
You're going to have that overflow because people naturally are going to look for places to park other than meter parking places. And where, that's like being a strategist fighting a battle. You've got to try to outguess your enemy.
I'm with you on that. We're okay.
So you've got to continually be fluid in responding to that situation. And we're dealing with that now. We're in the process of creating a residential parking district to kind of preserve the residents on Harbor Island right across the bridge as you come from the main island, simply because that overflow has occurred. And particularly on the weekends and peak holidays, they become captives in their own houses. So, yeah, once you've got it implemented, it's a continuing dynamics to try to deal with the issue as it moves along. And you just learn to deal with it. But we find that is the only way that we can deal with the additional costs of providing the services that are demanded when your population is increasing sometime.
So, what do you guys charge as a rate?
$2 an hour right now, and there's some discussion about going to 204.
And how many meters?
1,450.
And that is a challenge. I mean, I hadn't thought about that when we were talking. Like, I look out the window here, and I go, because you've got the parking right over there, and as soon as you start charging people, and that's what we've really, in the past 3 years, that's really grown where the Harbor Island part of our beach is taking more and more of an overflow. And that's something you have to consider. I don't know how you regulate it, but it would be an issue.
It was demand generated on our part. People who were suffering the most from the overflow through one of the previous aldermen came to the board and said, "You got to help us. You know, we can't stand this anymore." And so that's what generated the district. We also had put meters in on one of the roads, and the income from the meters didn't justify their being there. So we pulled from that particular area, and now there's thought about doing it on another area. But we have to wait to get the citizen input from that area to see if that's compatible with their desires. And that's for another decision. So that's part of the evolution. You know, you try it in some places, you think it'll work, it doesn't work. And so you have to then reorient your resources.
It will certainly test your mettle as elected officials, because you're going to have pros and cons, and they're going to be at times.
Oh, yeah. Well, so I think from our standpoint, even if you build all those regulations, the cost of the police for the number of meters we have and what we think we'll get, they almost wash.
Well, if you have your police enforcement, see, that's the other advantage to having a contractor. They do all the enforcement, so you're not...
Well, then their costs go up too, which they pass on, so you reduce your revenues. They're doing it, your revenues are still reduced, right?
Yeah, right. It's just not an additional duty for the police during the peak season. That was what I was trying to get at.
So you have your contractors enforce your non-parking issues?
In this particular area with residential parking, yes, their responsibility will be extended to that as well. They'll issue the tickets, and they will be the ones who are cruising the area to see if there are violations.
In the off-season, our police department traffic on streets with no parking. That will be part of some no parking restrictions. But all of the citations are handed to the parking office, so the police, when they write a parking ticket, it goes right to the parking office.
Right. What about complaints?
The majority of the complaints are handled through the parking office, and they have an appeal process that occurs. And that appeal process generally works very well. If there's any questions, for example, we're starting our parking, paid parking started yesterday. But for the first week or so, they're just going to give warnings if we give tickets. And often they'll call if we have a unique situation occur. For example, they might have a funeral at somebody's house or whatever. And we'll certainly honor those appeals for that. So we try to use a little bit of judgment in the appeal process too. But somebody's always trying to throw you a curveball. There's no doubt about it.
So you don't have paid parking during winter?
No, we do paid parking from March 1st to October 31st, from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Bob, if it was 10% of your revenue instead of 34%, would it be worth it?
Well, I think it would. And the reason being is I don't see how the elected leadership can transfer that cost of doing business in the summertime to the taxpayer. Because your communities are like us. We've got population 2,600 in the wintertime, 26,000 in the summertime. So you're shifting that burden to the taxpayer. And that's I think that's the whole goal here, is to be able to provide the services in the summertime to everybody, including the beach, the police, sanitation, et cetera, without that burden being captured by the
Do you give residents passes so they can go park?
No, they can buy a pass. They can buy a seasonal pass, a residential parking pass for $25, and they can park anywhere in town with the exception of the off-street parking lots. We have 5 off-street parking lots. They can't, they're not valid in there. But yes, they
can. 2 permits per building. Not like a duplex can't get 4.
Right.
Get 2.
And we were driven to that because if we had this unlimited number of residential parking passes, we put the overgrowth number of...
Well, yeah, so that's the other issue we're going to have, right? And I think it's a pretty critical issue. That's why I'm interested here at Caroline Beach on this one, is in Curry Beach, the analysis shows a lot of this parking downtown, residents want to go park down there, so they're going to buy passes, and then that decreases your revenue, right? So... The initial presentation was like, okay, this is going to be $100,000 to Curry Beach, but when you start factoring in the capital costs and stuff, it starts dropping pretty fast. And their initial analysis from one of the contractors, right, who Carolina Beach uses, did not discount that totally. I'm like, well, that's not even right. So from the financial standpoint, it's like, okay, that doesn't even make sense. You're leaving out a big chunk.
Well, the residential parking passes don't come free. And we generate about between $55,000 and $60,000 a year just in the residential parking passes.
What's your rate?
$25.
And you'll never make everyone happy with that, and that's where, like, with the Harbor Island Park residential parking
right
now, a lot of people would like to have more. We're really sort of in a corner with that.
Yeah.
We gotta be fair to everyone. We feel like 2 is fair, giving everyone an opportunity to buy 2.
And we also have a commercial parking pass. The business wants to have on-street parking for their employees, but that's $260, $290. It's right. More pricey.
Mm-hmm. What about Carolina?
You know, ours is very similar to what I think theirs are. I think, you know, starting off will be growing pains, people want to get used to it. You know, we tweaked ours several times since I've been there. When we do enforcement, we don't do enforcement calls, so on and so forth. But it's a learning curve. I think your residents have to get used to it, and your visitors have to get used to it, and then basically grow into it. We're, from a financial perspective, ours basically breaks even too, for the most part. We do, out of that, get a bonus because they manage Freeman Park. Freeman Park, we think, takes in a lot of money. So our program takes in probably between Freeman Park and parking about $1.2 million, maybe $1.3 million. And we spend a lot of money out, going out and basically servicing Freeman Park for one. Take all the expenditures we have, take all that out of it, we may make about $300,000 a year out of all of it.
And of that,
we've got police officers, we've got people manning the gates, we've got people in the porta-johns, in the trash, street sweepers, you know, we've got people manning the gate, we've got enforcement, so all that is it's not a huge cash cow like we've got.
But if you take out Freeman Park and you just look at our paid lots, it's barely a wash.
See, that's what I'm concerned about.
We won't say $100,000 in Curry
Beach. Yeah, no, it's not. I know it's not. I'm exactly where you go. It's not.
We took all our meters out and made free parking in downtown. We took out a bunch of meters.
Right.
The only revenue we get on parking was our surface lots.
Right.
Which, and you thought we had, what, about 600 spaces on that?
Most folks, there are a lot of vacant lots, a lot of landowners that live out of town, so what we're seeing is a lot of people parking on those lots.
Yep.
They just pull up people's yards, and nobody's policing, nobody's enforcing. I don't know if you guys have any words to prohibit that, but, you know, property owners not being responsible, then what do you do? So we get a lot of that, we had a lot of that this summer, we had all the vacant property that the Hilton was willing to go, and people were just parking for free, and across the street was, you know, paid parking, and the good people that had a conscience would park over there, and other folks felt like they needed free parking, would park on the private property. So it's a mixed bag. I don't, you know, from a manager's perspective, I don't, it's hands-off. A lot of it is very hands-off. I don't get a lot of phone calls, maybe one or two a year. Most of those are from locals that decide they were going to park.
So what about the right beside those lots that turn into parking lots because they're pushed there, right?
In the event that I would probably, you know, have to call them.
Those are commercial.
Yeah,
lots.
Those are all right there. Right.
Not necessarily.
There's some privacy
in the south and other places. That
if you move down towards the south, then you get some of that issues too.
The only really challenge I think we had last year was we were on Ocean Grove, or parking lot behind, street behind that.
Yep.
People parking all over the place and all kind of crazy stuff. So
yep.
I think we fixed that, or at least we addressed it. I'm not saying we fixed it, we addressed it. I think it seems much better because of it down there.
The third item is the business numbers.
Yep.
You have to consider it. We do not have any parking meters on Lake Park Boulevard. Right, what you were saying. We moved them just like Steve said a couple of years ago. So you have to consider the distance. And parking is, they go at 6 p.m. up to 6 p.m. We go up to 7 p.m. for our business zones, so that they'll go down to our central business district and park free. And so that's the third animal you have to consider.
Is that correct?
And they're a big animal. You know, the business is business and brings in money, of course.
Ironically, in the summertime, if you're driving down there around 7 o'clock, you see, even though we have stickers on the meters that say it's only enforced from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m., people plugging money in the
morning. Well, I mean, so my view of that, and I'm not saying this is a correct view, this is a view of someone that grew up down here and listened through y'all's evolution of parking, right? So y'all got a reputation that you're going to ding people. It was made in the 80s, in my opinion, because I lived through it. And so people are, even now, that plays 25 years later, right? That, hey, I better feed the meter or I'm going to get a huge
bill. We're perpetuating every
chance to get me. Yeah. I don't know like that. I'm just going to get
it.
That's right. Yeah, exactly right. I'm not going to save a dollar and cost myself 40 or 50 or whatever it is. I don't know what they're buying around. 35 now?
Yeah. So, yeah, we thought I'm going to take that 35.
Yeah.
Something to consider too in the future. We batted this around, or at least discussed it when we were talking about an extra quarter. This is something we all just be thinking about as we look at nourishment dollars. Mm-hmm. You know, we may need to see if we can get the state to say something specific about parking increases and parking fees to go straight towards beach sand. That spreads the cost out some to people who are visiting the beach and using it. That's going to be a substantial amount of money here in the future for the beach towns to come up with. It's just something to be thinking about in the future. That might be one of the revenue sources.
Yeah, the issue is it's got to make money and not
impact
citizens, right? So, I mean, my biggest concern is what I feel happened in Riceland. I didn't live there, but I heard about it at school every day, right? Is that when they did the parking meters, people moved into the next road. So for us, that's this road right here. And every citizen on Third Street is going to be at every council meeting in the summer, right? So we'll have them June, July, August, September, if we put parking meters out there, because they're going to park. And even if we put in the correct ordinances, they're going to be up there because they're getting tickets because their family's down and they're parking in the right-of-way instead of, because they don't really have driveways. I mean, if you drive down in Curie Beach, because of the way we evolved, there's a lot of parking that's really on town property, right? Every citizen, including my house, is on town property where I park. It's not really on my property. I'm not saying that's right, but to fix that is going to be a big, big mess in the town. And so paid parking, if it's not generating some good revenue, it's like, man, you know, everyone, you spin up everyone for nothing.
It may do more damage than this.
Yeah, exactly right. That's why I'm interested in how y'all evolve to it, right? Because we don't have a big business district. We have a very small one. And really what people come down here for is to get to the beach accesses in the summer, right? We have a beach access at the end of every road, and at least in the old part of town. If you make those all paid, it's not very far to just move to the Third Street and park in someone's yard. But what they think is their yard, right?
People who are bringing kids, they've got chairs, they've got coolers, they've got all the kids' toys. If you're charging a reasonable price to park a block closer, that's where they're going to be. And that's my experience as somebody who is hauling you know, a year's worth of stuff to the beach twice a weekend, three times a weekend with my kids. You know, if it's $5 an hour, maybe I'll park a block back if I'm going to be there all day. But if it's $1 an hour, it's so much more worth it to me. That my kids remember they forgot something in the car. It's easier to run back to. It's so much more convenient if it's a reasonable price. And you put up signs that, you know, you can put up signs that say resident parking only.
Yeah.
To protect the rights of the people who have no place else to park, make it clear to the visitors that they can't park there. You don't want to put up a no parking sign because then that means that your residents can just put up a sign that says resident parking only. And make the enforcement strong enough so that nobody else parks there. And then the residents get the benefit of continuing to park where they need to, but other people aren't taking their space.
And that's the avenue we're going down with establishing a residential parking district in a certain portion of town, particularly focused on those target areas where the expansion occurs. We're going to try that and see what happens.
Right. And there were different mechanisms that were looked at for enabling residents to park in those town rights of way. And we settled on just doing the standard beach pass because one of the things that has been a concern for us is people who have rental properties, mm-hmm. and they've got not necessarily seasonal but long term. Mm-hmm. Well, what they'll do, every property owner is entitled to buy two passes. What they'll do is they'll come in and say, we lost one, so we need to buy another. Well, now we just jack the price up for
the lost one.
For lost and replacements. On the parking district, we have a reentry, well, it's actually a small tax, but it's a decal that people use to get back on the beach after hurricane. And there was some thought about just using that as the residential pass,
right.
rather than having an extra pass. And that was rejected for all sorts of reasons, not the least of which was the rental issue, because those folks can get one too, and then you just compounded the problem taking up paid spaces with people who are long-term renters, and then you're losing revenue. So the idea was if this doesn't work, we revisit it after this year and try to come up with another, you know, solution. But it's all demand generated from that,
correct.
From that point of view.
And I'm going back to what you had said about families, and you guys correct me if I'm wrong, but I think our overflow on Harbor Island is mainly, and I would be doing the same thing when I was in college, younger kids looking for a free place to park. The families generally, they don't blanket 2 hours. They go on the main parking as close as they can. I think a lot of people, one guy when we raised rates, the last time we did it, I remember a gentleman got up, a citizen, and I had thought about it this way, because I was in college back when we didn't have meters. And he sort of made an analogy that made sense, and when I started thinking about it, he said, you know, $2 an hour, and he said, you know, he's like, that's a bargain on the beach. He said, you come here for 5 hours for $10, he said, what's a movie ticket cost now? And he started comparing it, he said, when people have their family and they got all their gear with them, $10 to go, but we charge $12 for the day if you want to stay longer. He said, in reality, it's a bargain. And I've never thought of it that way, because I sort of look like you do, like everything should be free, but I think it's become a necessary evil almost for towns to try to seek revenue to pay for the services for all the businesses.
Right. It's expensive to have to.
There's no easy answer to it.
Yeah.
One of the other areas you need to consider, too, is the filming industry is taking off again locally here. They will come in at the peak. Peak periods of the year, they won on 4th of July, 2 years ago on 4th of July weekend, closed down one of our major roads for the entire 4th of July weekend. And we discourage them from doing that, but the fact is that they had to pay the same price as people coming to the beach for those individual parking places. And when they start taking up 40 parking places, those are 40 parking places that people are coming to the beach don't have, so they need to pay for that. And so we have structured our filming ordinance very close to our parking lots to make sure that those costs of parking are transferred to the filming industry. And it's worked out relatively well.
We've done the same thing. We've charged. They've been coming down here too. And we'll charge a, you know, first base rate, whatever the normal base is, $7 a day.
Sure, they have no problem doing
it. Yeah, and
I think we can address that now and charge them separately because they have to apply to do that.
Right.
And I would hope. I mean, I don't know what we've done in the past, but I don't know. I know they filmed it a year or two because we charge them money. Right. Yeah. So we don't charge our visitors, but we charge the film industry. Mm-hmm. We're all for you on that.
I mean, there's no one.
Because they interrupt everything, right?
Mm-hmm. I mean, your beach is going to be different than ours.
Yeah. How often do you have major repairs and what kind of, you know, replacements, whatever, What kind of cost are you talking about and how often?
The regular meters last, and the street meters last a long time. The company we have now, they take them out and they clean them and oil them and fix them, so they last a pretty good long time. We have to follow any of those. The pay stations, they have their little problems, which they use on getting paper warranty, and they fix them within the next day or two. Or you direct folks to another meter to pay for that lot or what have you. So once they're paid for, you may get, what would you say, 6, 7, 8 years?
Yeah, I'd say 5 to 7 years.
Yes,
and the problem is here, we're not like the average community who has pay stations because of the humidity and the water intrusion here. The pay stations have been problematic over the years.
Yep.
There's been problems, everything from paper, little tickets expanding, attracting and jamming up the system. Lanier's gotten to the point that we've gone through several different providers for the pay station. I think we found one now that provides a quality pay station. But the Lanier Park, they do the maintenance on them. They do all our meters. They refurbish all the meters every winter. They come out looking brand spanking new. So I'm of the old school, though. I still believe strongly in the old manual meter that you stick the water in. But
they're not cheap. Awesome. I mean, they're 8 to 12 grand a piece, depending on what your purchase for
a station. Ours are 15,000 a piece.
We had to finance that for 3 years.
Right.
We bought about 6 or 7 1 year. They're still in operation. The debt service is gone.
Well, they were saying 7 years, but my analysis, I was using 5, so it sounds like I was at least in the range of what you guys are experiencing.
Yeah. Do your pay stations take credit cards?
Yes, sure. Technology, I think, is the key. That's probably one. They may still be running in the end of 6 years, 7 years, but we had issues with our credit cards and how you process those and when they're processed real time. And so we had to kind of replace a lot of our machines were outdated. So that's more of the reason.
You want to use your phone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
The pay by phone, hasn't really taken off like I thought it would. Some of my lines has rights for me, but we get very little.
Credit cards are the biggie.
Yeah, and part of our goal was to increase, compliance.
Yep.
So we didn't have to rely on the citations.
Yep.
And I think Lanier's done a real good job of that, trying to make it real understandable. So if
it's
you
very
did,
easy when you're parking, it's very
and
easy.
That's gotten better and better, I think.
I'm going to be interested to see this year if they started doing some data collection on the credit cards to tell us where the visitors are coming from, which would hopefully help us target our marketing and advertising dollars. At least to start to build a database on where, so that part of the technology is beneficial.
This sounds like something y'all need a committee for.
We don't need another committee. We have plenty of committees in our town.
We need to know the rates that you're charging Wastewell, so we'd like to be a little bit under those.
$2, GI, $2.
Cheap and easy, that was going to be a lot.
What's your resident pass? Do you sell your resident pass?
Well, not if you're a resident or a renter.
Is that free?
It's $50. We do have a pass for $50. If I live across from the junction, you can buy year-round pass for $50. So business owners that have people park money, so yours is a little higher. That's been a problem of ours too.
Yeah.
Our CBD doesn't have any parking. Luckily, we've still got ample spaces, but if we were really crunched for space, those folks that work downtown would get a $50 pass and park downtown.
The one problem we have encountered with businesses is that, particularly the restaurants that are on the beach, their employees have started parking in our recreation area and they have started shuttling their employees back and forth to work. So that has been part of that dynamic we were talking about.
Well, as my perspective is as a longtime resident at the beach, the $5 pass that we can buy until March 31st, and then $15 after that, even at $25, which is what Rysel said they charge for their residents for parking, it's invaluable because without it, I would never be able to get to the beach in the summer. I would never, I could maybe find a spot. But I would be annoyed that as a resident I was paying, so I would go a lot less. So to me, it's worth it. I mean, I would buy it for probably even $50 a year. I would buy it just for the convenience. I know it sounds lazy, but for the convenience of being able to take my family down there, and I like the benefit of that because this is, it's my town too, and I would hate to feel like I was getting shoved out in the summer. Like, do I have to decide? Well, you know, today I don't have to pay to park here, tomorrow I do, you know, I like that. And I,
I think
everybody in town takes advantage of being able to buy
it. I think Cary Beach would definitely do residential passes if we did it, but it drops the value prop hugely. Right? I mean, it just does. When you start doing the math, it just drops it out.
But it's a nice park. It makes up for some of the hassle of, of fighting with the tourists for the...
Well, if you look at doing just passes, the town I worked in did a resident pass, and that was free. That came as part of your taxpayer money. But if anybody else came to town, had to buy a pass, either a day pass or a week pass or a month pass or seasonal pass. So if you were parking in town, you had to have some kind of pass on your car. So, and they charge really high rates for the visitors for the passes. So you didn't have the meters, you didn't have anything else or the pay stations to deal with.
One of the things we are experiencing, say, is that I think because of the paid lots, we have people parking in HOA lots and condo lots.
Oh, yeah.
So we have predatory, like towing services coming out. So now that, I get more complaints about that than anybody. Person pulls in, parks in, throws this thing out. Somebody goes in to check into a condo. They lift that thing out, take a downtown, $200 bill, and the poor person standing there. I just put my stuff in there, so they go get a little tag in the car.
Right.
So I get a lot of that. And I think that some of that has to do with the illegal people parking in these things. And people who pay for parking, who don't want to pay for parking, so I just pull in this lot.
Yeah.
Because it looks like it's open. A lot of these lots are really open right next to where you have paid parking. Just pull right in there.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of that. You'll probably experience that more down here.
I'm sure we would, right? And I know what the HOA associations would do in our council meetings, right? I mean, that's why we're talking about it and moving slowly, because I think...
If you're worried about a council meeting, don't have your council meeting during the summer, then.
I'm not worried about that.
If you're worried about that, you're in the wrong position.
Well,
you're missing a half problem with people, right? It sounds like you are.
Let me restate my position. My issue is the citizens will not like it, and that's what we're elected to do, right? So, you know, you're right. It's not that they come express themselves at the council meeting. It's that that's their opinion, and that's what we should be thinking about. So how's that a little better?
They will come.
I know that.
If you charge,
we only charge $5, just like Sarah was saying, up to the 31st of March. And some people only bet $5. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And I'm glad to hear you say you would pay 50, because during the budget, I'm going to recommend that we go up to $10.
You're on the record.
It's unbelievable. It is.
I mean, where else can you get a year-round parking pass? And it's $2. It's 2 hours per block. Per day. So, yeah. No, I mean, that's what it is. It's 2 hours per block per day, which means we can park in a lot for 2 hours. I don't mind getting up and moving my car after 2 hours.
Because, you know,
as a kid, I used to go to the Jersey beaches. I lived in L.A. I went to the beaches all up and down California. I lived in Savannah. I mean, that's just part of going to the beach, and people understand that. If they have the ability to pay a reasonable price and stay in a lot all day, that's a phenomenal bonus. But I don't know anybody, none of my friends, when we go to the beach, we have to go move our car after 2 hours because we've already got the pass. We can find a spot someplace else. We're going. That's a very small price to pay. And that keeps turnover, so that keeps residents from staying in the same lot all day and losing revenue. So when I move out, I guarantee you, there's somebody ready to pull into that spot behind me. So the town may lose a little bit around. But again, the residents, most of the residents aren't necessarily staying in a spot for 8 or 10 hours per day either. You know, because we have it all the time. We'll go for a couple of hours. Somebody who's coming down for the day, they want to be able to stay for the day. So, you know, for the residents, you know, just go for a couple hours here and there, wherever it is.
You know. Tim, do you sell parking passes to Cary Beach people?
Yeah, if you want a $50 pass, you could buy a $50 pass and park anywhere downtown. Downtown is free parking for the most part, Lake Park, Cape Fear. It's 2 hours at a time, like you're saying. The others just pay by the hour.
Okay, same thing in Restville Beach.
Yeah, and then we used to have a time limit on the oceanfront of 3 hours. We've gotten away from that, where you have to move somewhere. somewhere else 3 hours, but it's just, it's a lot. It's all they're feeding the meter, you park there.
I will tell you, the $5 fee for residents, it's probably not enough.
No.
Because it costs time or money. But no, just put the stand together, and then you have to physically go there, so you can't do it online, so there's no efficiency. $5, it probably costs us $10 to $15 just to give that pass out. I mean, that's an actual truth. If you look at statistics, that number we're using is. So residents don't get them because they have to go to town hall, bring something, do this, you know, so it takes a little while to go.
So if we charge them more, they don't?
No, but basically, we're not trying to cover our costs, and if we do it online, they might do it.
Well, and if they don't get it, then they have to pay the tourist fees. So, I always get it.
Well.
It's a good point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Make sure you charge more than Carolina Beach.
Oh, no problem.
Well, anything you charge more than Carolina Beach. All the people in the family are saying it's a fine.
That's fine with us. Thing all stop in Carolina Beach. That's why we didn't complain when your sign says Carolina Beach goes this way. We're fine. We have a different view of it than you do. All the visitors can go to your two beaches, and that's fine with us, I think. Maybe I'm wrong. I'll look at my other four commissioners, but I think this is fine. We don't dislike visitors, but we're a residential beach. I'm not trying to do any future elected office that why you
And every beach is unique. I mean, yeah. Your situation is going to be different. That's why you need to be dealing with the second round. And it's hard at all.
I appreciate the input that we should charge on Carolina Beach. Oh, Lord.
I just park at Dean's house.
Yeah.
I'm glad I like that. Yeah.
I have a question, I guess, for Carolina Beach. Unless our mayor is involved, I understand that you might be in conversation with DOT and the MPO on bike lanes for the bridge or something for pedestrian walkway, even if it's attached to it. Will that be going on today?
Yes, the two towns basically thought that there need to be some improvements for bike bed on the beach. And they're getting ready to resurface the whole bridge and do some things. They're saying there's some limited space there, but we just want to at least have that discussion again to see if they could accommodate a little better pedestrian.
If they're letting that contract this week, why didn't we have the conversation earlier this week?
There's two parts of the contract. They're not going to let either contract this week, but the first contract they're going to look for the guardrails on the far side of the bridge. And then the second contract they're going to let is for the resurfacing of the bridge. And in the discussions, DOT has, our region has a new engineer in charge. She is coming down this afternoon. Their original response was no. We're not doing anything for another bike bridge. We're not doing anything. We're not doing it. We've continued to push them over the past several weeks. They've agreed to sit down and discuss it. We're not talking about widening the bridge. We're simply talking about restriping in a different way. That we're allowed at least one pedestrian multi-use lane on the bridge. They have some concerns, and we just don't quite understand it, that the bridge wasn't designed to handle that much more concrete. We're not adding any concrete. We've got asphalt. We don't really care what the material is as long as there's a designated 5 feet. So we're hoping that Karen will understand that today. They want to do it. Then it becomes the cost issue. It will not be in their funding. It will be coming back to look at Carolina Beach and Carolina Beach or the MPO or someone participating in that because it won't be in there. That's the way it's going to turn to me because it'll be an additional cost. We are pushing pretty hard for the MPO and through Carolina Beach to get them to do something because if they are going to touch the bridge now, they're probably not going to do it for another 10 or 15 years. So if we don't get a lane now, we're not going to get it. And then our Greenway plan we approved last year.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
We had to go through the same process with our bridges on Banks Channel. And they had to according to them, they have to abide by a certain set of rules. If it's a designated bike lane, it has to be on both sides. So what we did was we just had a paint of.
They're going to put bike symbols.
Symbols.
On part of it. Now, the bridge they were narrow.
Yeah, Gerald, the bridge, they put us an extra lane in, but they didn't officially designate it as a bike lane. So they got around that 4 or 5 foot width on both sides.
We have a citizen that's been pretty involved, and he is. Dug up a bunch, including a handful of bridges in Washington, D.C. that have one lane. Mm-hmm. And the federal government is telling DOT they need to make sure these things happen. Yeah. But we're pushing hard on it. We'd love to see something this afternoon. And then we'll be having a MPO is hosting a Greenway for the kickoff program for the entire county. They're hosting one in April, I think on the 17th at Carolina Beach, the Rec Center to get public input.
Yes.
Carolina Curie Beach has, Pleasure Island has a Greenway plan that we've adopted. What we've tried to do through the MPO is go back and express to them that you're just starting your county and Wilmington Greenway plan. Why don't you start working with Wrightsville Beach and Pleasure Island and the Curie Beach, Carolina Beach plans and getting us some money to get those built? Because they're just now spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on the plan. We already have a plan. So we're hoping that the vice chair.
Here's our frustration, too. We've been to the planning process twice now for the plans, and the plans have been sent there. Mm-hmm. Nothing materializes beyond the planning stage. And that's frustrating.
Well, we're getting a little better representation than the MPO. We did Dean as the vice chair. And I think the smaller communities are stepping up a little bit and trying to express to them that.
And I'm on the Greenway Committee, so I'll definitely
come on, we're in 30.
We'll be having a presentation from my father, from Lossie and April, on that plan for us. That whole thing will be outlined. But the fact that the feds are pushing the state DOT to do that for the bridges, I think is a really good idea.
Mm-hmm. You taking other topics? I'm just throwing out real quick, just to keep in your back pocket also, is there's been chatter in the past about some seeking to change the sales tax forms. Beach Council, we probably should really stay the course on that. That would be really bad news for us if they change that.
I've heard the same conversation, reallocating those funds.
How about the TDA forms? The discussion on that.
Kenny Thomas has been a real advocate of the state legislation on the TDA, and him leaving, you don't know what you're going to get. And that's what's concerned me, because there are certain elements that want to adjust the TDA funding.
In which direction?
Remove it from marketing programs.
You're talking about sand.
Yeah.
Just the sand? Oh, really? Well, I mean, there are some that said that's what it originally was set up for.
It was.
It was 80-20, I think, is what they're saying.
Okay. Well, it was 80-20 on the first three. Now we have the first three and second three. The whole thing is
60-40 on the first three and then 50-50 on the second three.
Right. I'm more interested in what we can do on the second 3% 50-50 split and what the beach towns are doing to advocate a better position to capture more of our self-generated so that we can direct it rather than having the Wilmington Convention Visitors Bureau tell us how to spend our money. That's the bottom line. No one wants to talk about it, but I mean, they're telling us how to spend our money.
Well, if you go to the TDA and put on your knee pads and try to get your money from them, and I think that all came about a number of years ago when it was in North Carolina is not a home rule state.
That's right, yeah.
There's where the problem lies, essentially, and there's very little trust in local government. So it's easy for the legislature, in my mind, for the legislators to say, well, we're just going to handle this money. My concern when they try to do the TDA, to readjust the TDA, is the light's going to come on and the state, they're going to say, there's revenues that we can tap, let's take some of that. And so it's going to be interesting.
It's really if we focus on the second 3%, because you're right, the legislators don't have a lot of confidence in home rule. However, they're giving it to a non-elected group of people that are doing something with, you know, really, I'm all for the Convention of the Visitors Bureau. But I'm more for if Carolina Beach is generating X number of dollars in revenue, how do we direct our revenue? And if we choose to join forces with Wrightsville and Curie Beach and get our web page or do something like that, that's fine. But having it come from high and tell us how to do it.
Having that money maintained by the county, too, right. And then keeping the books.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Trying to get your numbers out of it.
Right. No, it's very, so for me, I mean, that is a, I understand it's a, oh, you can't, that's third rail, you can try, you know, they can't as well. You know what is a lot of money that our community, when we start looking at beach nursery, the dredging, and other things to generate beds on beds.
If you look at their monthly reports, when they put their monthly reports out, the cover page that comes out with their monthly reports tells you how much money is given out monthly to all the different agencies. And it also tells you that $1,500 a month goes to the county just for taking those monies and managing them.
Right.
That's a lot of money over a period of years. So there is that they take that money at every level the county's getting it. Plus they've got control of it. And then
it is one of those things that realistically, and I'm hoping Rexville will set up a committee that will take the lead on that. It's really the second thing. I understand, and I don't think I have any personal opposition to, we ought to set aside some money for beach nursery. That was a pretty prudent thing to do, because it looks like we're going to start needing that. And that is a direct source of people that benefit from the beach. But it's that second 3%, how that's divvied up and who directs it, who tells us how to spend it, on what we spend it. And we just don't, I don't think we have any full control over that.
Well, it starts at the county level, because the ratio was actually shifted back in the 90s. And the way it was presented to the county at that time was that the beach communities supported shifting the ratio away from sand and more toward marketing and promotion. And, not having any direct input from the beaches at that time, the person, it was Louise McCall, I mean, her word was accepted. Well, later we found out that Louise had somewhat misrepresented the position of the beach towns, and but the damage was done because the county's recommendation then went to the state, and then the state, did whatever. So,
well, they complicated it with the convention center. I mean, if you read that legislation, it gets pretty complicated. It's all geared towards that. Okay, so we understand what the game is. I'm just asking, are these communities, are we ready to step up and start throwing ourselves into that and saying, wait a minute, we're here to advocate for a better pro rata direction of that money?
And I know Tim sees the same listservs that I do, and over the last 2 or 3 years, there has been a peaking of interest in the new occupancy taxes by other communities, whether they're coastal or not. There's that interest in how did you get that legislation written, and where is the money going? Because they're all grappling with the same thing.
Well, it goes to our trip to Washington. I mean, philosophically, if we're not going to get the help from above, then we're going to have to keep control of it, and we need more to be able to self-direct our resources. And I don't think there's anything wrong with going to the county and saying, we're generating it. You need to let us have a bigger say on how it's spent.
Just have to fight that battle.
Right.
Yeah.
We're going to have a better friend, I think, in Catherine. We talked to Danny. Danny's been very shy about wanting to even open that campaign.
Danny likes the way it is.
Right. Well, so it seems to me you're mixing 2 points. I want to make sure I understand it right. So at one time you were talking about the second 3% split.
Right.
And then
for me,
the separate issue was how you're directing what's spent, right? So which one's the real issue to you? Because I'm not sure I understand.
Well, it is the second 3%.
Right. Okay.
It is both how it's split, and then that split evokes a direction. We're told how to spend that money once it's split.
Right. But is what you want to change the split? Is that what you're asking?
3%?
Yeah.
No.
So the reason it was 50-50 is because the motels and hotels and businesses all didn't want it at all. And when it came in, that was the compromise to get the second one in. Was, okay, 50% will be marketing. That's how it happened, because I was on council when it happened. And so that was the compromise to get it in at all, because otherwise it wouldn't have got in.
So a lot of marketing direction is coming out of business group.
Yeah, no, that's a separate issue. That's why I want to make sure I understand. That's why I'm asking, so I understand clearly the issue that you're talking about. Is it the fact that it's the split the way it is, or is it...
Well, what's the first half of that 3% goes to? The second 3%.
Local activities.
On
the first, on the second 3%, you have to go to the TDA to get that marketing money that budget is generated through the Convention and Visitors Bureau in conjunction with your local marketing committees.
Right.
So you have to go to the TDA to get that 50% of that second 3%.
I don't know how often they really say no to that. I mean, So that's what I'm saying. If you're trying to change the split, understand how it developed. Because I think it's
not so much the split. It's the advertising dollars. It's quick direct and our dollars.
Okay, so then you're talking about advertising. You're not trying to change what you can use it for. You're talking about who's going to advertise it.
But that's changed tremendously in the past 2 years. We have a lot of leeway in how.
Yeah, I think you can too. If you went and told them this is our grant here in advertising, I don't know how much problem. Maybe not. Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
Well, here's a good example. Previously, until the new website came out, previously Carolina Beach, everybody knew the site.
Right.
As leads come into that, you can then direct out things specifically about your community.
That's right.
Today, if in the new site, as things come in, they go to fulfillment house and sends out one vacation guide.
Right.
It's for the whole area. So right. It just goes out. So all of our dollars are going to be generating that. So,
right.
And they don't have any idea of what that's going to generate as far as additional leads, additional business right. Into this community, but they're saying it's good for everybody. But the forefront of that whole activity is for the convention center of Wilmington. And the beach community is sitting outside. So you can sit there and say, well, listen. And they come out every month and they sit there and say, here's what's happening, here's what we're doing. And I understand that totally, but I understand how web works in that business. But in that process, they said, okay, we want to keep our old site. Oh, yeah, you can keep your old site, that's no problem. But in all reality, they want to sunset that old site as soon as they can.
Okay.
But that old site basically is generating things directly. But now it's going to be redirected to the new site. So every lead, every inquiry that comes in is going to go right to the convention visitor here. They're sending them to the film house. The film house doesn't send them out to Carolina Beach or Prairie Beach separate guides. It sends out a vacation guide for the whole area.
Right.
So somebody could pick any. So our dollars don't. So it's really not dedicated dollars to your community, our community, or their community. It's dedicated to the whole environment and moment.
Well, so that's why I wanted to ask the question to understand, because the solution. It's important to understand the problem, right? So
right.
For me, that's not a Daniel McComas or state legislature issue then, right? That's an issue within our control. And that's what I wanted to bring up is a concern that I've had for a long time is, do we as a beach community want to make sure that we get a county commissioner from one of the beach communities instead of always letting it happen?
Right.
Because that's where the drive comes from, right? So, and this is the perfect group, I think, to ask this question to is,
You should ask that question.
Yeah, I understand. So we didn't have meetings enough. But I think the bigger issue is the beach communities are underrepresented on the county commission. And that drives a whole bunch of these issues, right? Because when we're underrepresented there, it rolls down to, well, the convention center, well, you know, there's no county commissioner up there looking.
Right.
So if we change this, right? And so I've always thought this, and don't take this as I want to be a county commissioner, because I personally do not. But I think we as a group need to find someone and that has the beach interest more in. A perfect example of this was in the 90s when the county commissioners, you know, they used to give back to the beach communities from the county taxes cut that out in the mid-90s, and it's never came back. Even though when the beach residents property values skyrocketed at the last reimbursement and we shifted all the taxing, they still didn't fix it. I expected it to come back then and was kind of surprised it didn't. I think one is because we didn't advocate for it as three beach communities, but the second is there wasn't a county commissioner that's focused on the beach issues. I don't know how to fix that, but I think that's something that you're optimistic for this time. I didn't look at who signed up yet. Maybe there is a beach person, but longer term, that should be something that these three boards should consider how to advocate for, right?
I agree.
Well, Rick Abbott, this is a beach.
Well, then good. So,
Rick's been a good friend of the communities throughout the state, and I think he'll continue to do that no matter where he serves. But clearly, the beach communities on a variety of issues don't get as good a representation as we could.
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. I mean, I agree.
Parks money, MPO, all the different issues.
That's more than enough.
Pardon?
$1,500,000 less than enough for
parks money?
No, not on our no.
And also, he'll come there with a huge loan that's, over $300 million that we're still paying for on the utility authority.
Right.
And we get nothing at all.
No, and that's what a matter of not being at the table and advocating a position.
I mean, that's kind of the question I asked for this group. I don't know the answer to this one either. Is that the representatives are elected fault or our fault for not getting a coordinated position?
That's our fault.
Yeah, we're right. Coordinated.
Those that do it for you, you gotta advocate.
Right. Yeah. So I mean.
So I think we should have.
I think that's one. These are pretty important. I was pretty excited to come because I think there are some pretty significant issues that we're all probably in agreement in that if we coordinated better, it would help us better. Right.
And we should have our mayors and county commissioner meetings regularly.
I'll take it for a I'll take it for a 10. Yeah. Well, for Carolina, we should be the pro-10 since
we're
ready
to go.
Well, David, along those lines, we met with the county commissioners, but they met with the towns individually.
Right.
So maybe it's time for all three of us to meet together.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, we don't overlap on everything, but a lot of things, probably 80%, I think we probably did, right? I mean, we each got our own distinctive issues, but I think the majority of them were pretty lined up.
Yeah, but on our common issues, we should be at the table together.
Right, I think so, too.
I mean, we have a fair number of common issues.
Yeah, I think so.
Some of that goes back to what you said earlier, though, is encouraging your citizens to call them, like county commissioners, let them know what they want. Like we always take all the heat about property tax from our own local citizens and keep going, you know, your county commissioners, you're their constituent, let them know that you don't like the property tax.
Oh, yeah.
Well, in order to do that, we as councils need to help our constituents understand what those issues are.
Well, that's what I'm saying. But
we let them know. Here's where you need. Here's the issue. We need your support to reach out to the county. You need to object to these three items for representation. Maybe we see a little more concerted effort from our citizens to do that. So Tim will be writing a couple more letters.
Well, I think we ought to take Brian Berger and take him into our arms.
Knock yourself out.
He's looking for some friends.
Knock yourself out.
I know a lot of you guys on Curie Nation Carolina Beach boards, but we've got a couple new members. This is Daryl Mills, he's our member newest alderman, and Elizabeth King. And many of you met Bill Sisson before. Bill's finishing his first 4-year term. I just wanted to introduce him because I know a lot of you have met him before.
And we don't have a head honcho from Carolina Beach, but Tim, do you like to introduce yours?
Yeah, the mayor pro tem.
Steve Shuttleworth from Mayor Pro Tem, raised out of town. Ralph Rock, he's our new mayor. And Paul Lewis.
Lonnie Lashley.
Sarah.
Aaron's best edition.
She's good.
Probably our best edition. Yeah. In front of this face.
And then our town, of course, is Chuck Keener, David, Steve at Dan, Steve Pagley, and there's Emily Swearingen down there. And our student council, Andy Coons.
Is he a student?
Yeah. Our clerks are both here today, Nancy and Nancy.
What?
The Nancy team.
Yeah.
Well, with that being said, I think it's time we adjourn.
Well, so one question before we did. So, just is this is an annual thing? Is annual enough for what we're talking about?
It's been
quarterly, right?
Okay, sorry.
Yeah, it wasn't really
semi-quarterly.
Last time we were together was Jericho and Rice Hill Beach.
Yeah.
So that would be closer to annual, just to.
Yeah, that's what I was asking, right? So, I mean, I think.
Carolina Beach,
we did one.
No, you have
it's
yeah.
been twice a year.
Okay. I think we're trying to get quarterly.
Right. That's probably
nice.
That's good.
What would be a reasonable plan of attack to follow up on some of these issues as a coordinated?
Well, the advocate for the beaches, as far as the county commissioners are going for us to go to and ask them point blank, you know, what are you going to do for the beach there?
I think that's too generic, right? If you go ask someone, what are you going to do for me, if you tell them this is what I want you to work on, I think you got to be more specific. What's important? You got to tell them what's important to you.
You're right.
Work on something we don't care about.
And I think it's important to ask them who's going to be for us, and then get the ones that say they are and start.
Well, we want to start by narrowing down three key issues that we'd like to draw on.
That's what I think, yeah.
And then say, these are three issues, are you with us or against?
Because according to the issue, each commissioner is going to be different about it, right? Some of them are, they're all for, and some of them is going to split, because it's really the issue.
Well, Ken Menzies is coming up here, so now's going to be a critical time for people to commit to you.
Right.
Yep. So I think the point, so I guess the question is, how do we figure out the three key issues, right? I don't know, but I think that's a good point, right? If we just leave it lay until we meet and then...
Maybe the board start talking about it, talk about it with your board, your whole board members. We don't have Susan Collins here today.
Right.
And bring it back when we do that. I guess we're in line to host the next breakfast meeting. Maybe
well, if we just each at our next meetings, you know, come up with what we think are our three key issues that we can be in sync with the other two communities and then circulate
send it around, yeah.
Send it to the mayors and swatch them. And, or, you know, if you get it to the mayor, I'm sure he's going to forward it to us. And maybe likewise, rather than burden our staff, because he can't write all your letters.
So is that a good aside then that the council's come up with what are the three key issues we think we should be working on as a group and see if we got some agreement on what they are?
Fine.
Might be surprisingly different.
We don't know. We'll find out in 30 minutes.
Are you trying to pass the orders? Is that the end?
Wow.
Is that what you're trying to do?
Is that any kind of
smoking?